Compliance is a profession where people work tirelessly to make the world a better place. And there are hundreds of amazing and inspiring women who have helped the field develop into what it is today. Great Women in Compliance is part of the Compliance Podcast Network as they talk with women in compliance who are making a difference.
Hi, and welcome to the Great Women in Compliance Podcast with Hema Lomax and Lisa Fine. We're sponsored by Corporate Compliance Insights and produced by Tom Fox and the Compliance Podcast Network. Since we started GWIC, I've tried to have we call hashtag GGIC, a great gentleman in compliance guest once a year. And when we were at Compliance Week a few weeks ago, when Nick Gallo introduced the Women's Brunch and Learn when I was moderating, I knew exactly who that guy was going to be. Nick is one of the co-CEOs and the chief servant at Ethico, which provides ethics, risks, and compliance software. He is also a true advocate for diversity in our profession and supports women, which is evidenced not just by his sponsorship of the brunch, but his support for women in our community, for women authors, and including me, this one, when we had our book. He's also my conference BFF, whether he likes that or not. So thank you so much for joining me, especially as I've never interviewed you one-on-one. So this is so fantastic. So thanks for being here.
Glad to be here. Thanks so much for having me. I'm absolutely honored. I just love this podcast. I listen to it whenever I walk my dog. And yeah, I'm just so honored to be a double GWIC. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we love it. And we think about it. Let's start with you. You were not a lawyer and you were not originally in compliance. How did you get into this junket?
Yeah. So I'm a CPA and I came up in one of the big four accounting firms working in their advisory services. But my brother and I, we always wanted to run a company together. And growing up in our parents' business, we would, you know, our family motto was like, see what you can do to help. So we were cleaning toilets and taking out the trash. And then as we got older, we got more and more involved with the business and setting appointments for our sales reps, things like that. And we were the first ones in our family to go to college. And our parents were always like, hey, what are you learning in school that you could bring into the business? So we had this sort of this little thing to kind of learn on, to reference when we were in school, learning these abstract concepts. And we had the opportunity to take those abstract concepts into the business. And we got to see at kind of a young age how that kind of transformed and how our employees' lives changed and our family's lives changed and stuff. And we were just like, man, it'd be so cool to run a business one day. So my brother and I set off on that path to really build a toolbox that would help us be good operators should that opportunity ever present itself. And we transitioned into private equity. And it was there where we learned how to buy companies at a large scale, run them strategically from a board level, raise money, all that kind of stuff. And it was during that time that we each sort of saw something that ended up being kind of foundational and pushed us into the compliance space. My brother worked at a private equity fund that was healthcare services. They did all healthcare services companies. And what he saw was a really high correlation between like business quality and the existence of a good compliance program. What a lot of private equity funds do is what house flippers do. They buy something that's profitable, but maybe undermanaged, and they will put some linoleum down, put some paint on the walls, and really try to improve that property. And in my brother's fund, one of their major kind of paths to value creation was to embed a compliance function because they saw that there was, a high correlation between overall business quality, business outperformance, and the existence of a compliance program that was effective and focused on de-risking the organization and so forth. So Gio saw that sort of compliance-centric thing in his fund. And in my fund, I saw something else that I thought was pretty related, and that was kind of the value of culture. So we invested primarily in like manufacturing companies and massive machines, million square foot facilities, stuff like that. And I saw a direct correlation with the organizations that had a really strong culture. All those ones really kind of outperformed everybody else. When the CEO could walk through the plant and he would actually know the people, those organizations usually had a kind of a power structure where people on the front lines had a voice. They were able to share their ideas. Those ideas really had an influence and they ended up changing the operation. And all those little kind of decisions and interactions and dynamics would compound to kind of outperformance. So when the time came for us to raise our fund and see, we want to go buy a business, we want to get into a space where we can build something that we're passionate about and kind of go all in on, we were looking at for some kind of an intersection between this culture thing and this compliance thing. And that led us to kind of the ethics and compliance niche within the GRC market. And so long story short, we spent kind of 2 years looking for a business in the space that we could come into, learn, and grow. And we found this company, Compliance Line, in 2016. And that's really how we slipped off the log and fell into the compliance game. And so over the last 7 years, I just I feel like I've really found my home. There's so many, I mean, the people in this industry are so special. The impact that we can have in our organizations is so, I don't know, it's so transformative. You know what I mean? I mean, we spend so much time at work. We've all worked in these like toxic workplaces. We've all felt like we're pushing a string up the hill. And when those wheels can kind of catch a little bit and we can start to get some traction and people can kind of start to buy into this culture of integrity that we're all trying to build, there's so many positive externalities that come from that. You know what I mean? The belonging, the extra effort, the feeling like you're part of something, the pursuit of a noble mission in earnest. All those are things that I think we're all built for, but so many of us have been so jaded by our experience in the corporate world that, like, I don't know. I mean, I've been in spots where I feel stupid putting that extra effort that I was sort of like brought up. I was like, that was trained in me to sign your work, run through the base, put your heart into what you're doing. And you get into this sort of corporate machine, you get chewed up and spit out by it many times and you feel kind of stupid. I felt stupid, like trying to make an impact when I don't feel like I'm getting anything back because I feel like a cog in the wheel and stuff like that. And anyways, I could ramble on about like this whole yeah. thing for another hour, that's our path in.
Yeah. And it's interesting because when I think about culture and I think about the intersection of this, I really do think about when I talk to people, how do you make your employees feel comfortable at that moment where you have to make a tough call?
Right.
Can you do the right thing and feel like you have a company's support? And it doesn't mean that your companies are asking you to do something illegal or improper, but at the moment where you have a sales pressure or you have the numbers that have been promised to somebody else, do you feel like if somebody makes you feel uncomfortable or inappropriate, you can go
right.
and say, I can't do this. And your organization will say, you're supposed to do the right thing. You did the right thing. And that is what we want. And
right.
I do believe that, like you, it impacts the bottom line. It impacts where you work. It impacts everything. So,
yeah, I mean, because it's all related. It's one life. We don't have these partitions in our life. They just don't exist. And if you feel like you're kind of in a moral quandary at work, it's not like you're not thinking about that when you're making dinner. You know what I'm saying? It's not like you're not it's not like you're not carrying that with you in all of your other interactions and the other aspects of your life. It's really an important thing to get right.
Yeah. And you don't want people to be thinking about that stuff at home and when you're falling asleep. I mean, I think that's a problem for culture. Now with that, you are really, and this is the thing I really wanted to talk to you about is you are an ally. You have been, you walk the walk, you do what you say you're going to do on that, which I think is very significant and really appreciated by everyone in this community. But let's talk to you. What is an ally in your view?
So it's a really interesting question. I just think an ally is somebody who's like willing to take action on behalf of somebody else that doesn't benefit them directly. I think that's what it kind of boils down to. I don't know. I mean, there's just so many opportunities to help other people and to stand up for other people and stuff like that, that many times we feel like we can't do it or we shouldn't do it, or we just need to kind of focus on ourselves, that sort of base Maslow need of self-preservation. I mean, a lot of us live, I think, too much of our lives in that kind of a mode. Mm-hmm. And there's people all around us that can benefit from our encouragement or our voice or speaking up for them or whatever. And if we can just kind of focus a little bit out instead of on self, I think you can find a lot of opportunities to do that.
Yeah. And I want to ask, is this always been a priority for you? Or you had mentioned this as we started talking, that getting that the people in this field, and there are a lot of women, did that make you want to be more of an ally? Or totally. Was it something that came before? Or did it change your perception? I know you came from family too, that some strong women there as well.
Yeah. I don't know if it was always a priority. I think as I'm thinking about this question, I kind of think back to like how I was raised. I was the oldest in my family. We moved around a lot. It was always imparted on me how important it was for me to be a leader and to stand up for my siblings and to stand up for my mother and all those kinds of things. When I witnessed sort of firsthand, and this really had a big impact on me. We didn't really have a lot growing up, and both of our parents worked, and we fell on some hard times, and they really battled back, and they kind of carried us on their backs and created a better life for us. But that took a lot of hard work from not just my dad, but from my mom. And her working in sales in Florida in the 90s was like, it was just fraught with not cool things. I remember her coming home one night in particular, and she had a really hard day, and she had dealt with some kind of harassment that was light and joking around. And it just, it really bothered her, and she, but she didn't really have any other options. And I saw that throughout my career, right? I saw that in professional services, how I kind of have a thing for being a protector and helping people and, I don't know, sticking up for them. And I would see somebody who was more of a wallflower or a woman on my team who had a great idea that somebody would take. And I just, that always grated against me. So we just wanted to build a company here that would, like, where that kind of stuff wouldn't stand. I'm not saying that that stuff doesn't happen ever, but that shouldn't be allowed to persist. You know what I mean? And I don't know. I just think this is going to sound pretty trite, but we can't just sit back and just watch the world and be like, this sucks. Boy, that's unjust. That's not cool. That wasn't right the way this person was treated. Like, you can't just sit back. You have to grab that steering wheel and do something about it. And it doesn't take much to do something, you know, it doesn't take much to speak up for somebody or encourage them or be an advocate for them when they're not in the room. Those are things that I think my career has been built on, people kind of doing that for me. And to not sort of pay that forward, I think is, I just don't think it's right.
Yeah, I think that is a very, very good approach, especially, I mean, for women who may be more introverted. Men, I remember when I was young in my career, because I looked young, or I'd go into a room and someone would always look.
Well, you still look young.
The guy standing next to me who was older or more senior. And you have to figure out how to work through that. But you remember the people, women or men, mm-hmm. or anybody for that matter, who in the midst of all this kind of brings it back to you. And I know this might shock you, but in those situations, I've taught myself not to be a wallflower. But there are times where you really want to listen and think things through before you're going to speak. And you've got, and this is sometimes men in the room want to be heard first, and often. And mm-hmm. by then, the moment you'd be looking like it's like a tennis match, and the moment will pass. It gets easier as you get more senior in your career.
But it's hard, right? I mean, that's hard. And part of that like male thing, like we're kind of implicitly taught that throughout mm-hmm. our childhood. You know what I'm saying? Like at some level, we're kind of a product of our societal pressures and values and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. to your point, that's not really kind of embedded in most women growing up. And then they enter this space where there's a disproportionate number of men who are kind of behaving in this way. And I've just seen sort of firsthand throughout my life that the women I've worked with have taught me more than anybody else. You know what I'm saying? They just need to be unleashed. And sometimes we need to just give clear a little bit of a way or give them some encouragement. But you were talking about these lessons, right? Like these conversations that we have throughout our career where a light bulb turns on. And so many of those are from these pivotal moments are just like these simple conversations where somebody noticed you struggling with something and they gave you a tip or they gave you some wisdom or they gave you some encouragement or advocated for you kind of behind the scenes. Those are the things, like none of us go through life alone. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think the more of those connections we can make for folks, the more magic we can unlock.
And teach them how to make their own magic over time. Because
that's right. That forward, right?
Yeah, right. You absolutely. Can pay it forward, and you know, you can grow yourself just by knowing that there's that confidence. Let's think about this. We talked about a couple of different things, but how do you think that men can do better for women? And also we'll talk in a minute about diversity generally, because I don't want to miss that in this conversation, but how can men do better as allies for women? And really, does it matter?
So in the West, we tend to think of things in such sort of this binary way. Yes, no, black, white, 1-0. And in the East, in Japanese in particular, every yes or no answer can have actually three answers: a yes, a no, or kind of an NA answer. And that's really, I think, a better sort of picture of the world. That NA, that sort of third answer, allows for this gray. And I think that's what we see. And so I think if you ask sort of the average man what they think about female allyship, are you for it or against it? Most would say that they're for it. But in my experience, most behave in that sort of middle category, that NA category. Well, I'm not against it. Mm-hmm. And so I just think the way we can do better is to like, be for it, be actually for it. Like a passive state is not for it. A negative state is obviously not for it, right? Thumbs down on it is not for it. Thumbs up or thumbs down is also not thumbs up, is my point. So this concept of leaving the world better comes from an intentionality and a drive to observe things that are not in order and put those things in order, right? And you see people do that who pick up trash on the sidewalk that they didn't throw down, right? They have a commitment, a drive to leave the world better. You see people wipe up in, I mean, I've seen this before. Somebody wipes up a public bathroom. And so, well, you don't even work there. You're never going to use this bathroom again. Why would you do something like that? Well, that comes from somebody who's committed to leaving the world better. And they're willing to take those actions when they notice something that's not in line with this vision. And I just think men can do better by having a more clear vision of what sort of equality, whatever you want to call it, looks like in the workplace, and being like anti-passive. You know what I'm saying? You can't be passive. You have to be active. You have to be looking for opportunities to pick up that trash on the sidewalk, or looking for opportunities on how you can advocate for somebody on your team, man or woman, black or white, whatever, who could use that kind of help. Especially if there's somebody who you think has a ton of potential and is maybe not looking at themselves. Maybe they don't see in themselves what you see in them, right? That's our job to, I think, if you're on a team or you're surrounded by people, to help bolster their confidence and to encourage them and so forth. So I just think it takes an active, you have to shift into gear. Staying in neutral is the car's on, but it's not doing anything. You know what I mean? You have to shift it into a gear and start trying to be that change that you want to see. But I mean, there's so much passivity, and I get it. I don't think anybody gets to their deathbed and be like, that was easy. Everybody's overloaded and has a big to-do list and has insecurities and has these feelings of inadequacy and are trying to hit their goals, right? Everybody is doing that. It's natural to sort of focus on yourself and your individual self-preservation. But I think the magic of community, the magic of relationships, requires that we look up from ourselves and look to those around us to see who we can help and encourage.
I think it's also important, and we use a driving analogy, and so many times we talk about the bad parts of lanes, but one thing that I've learned, or that I think about, and I think that this is one thing that you've done a lot of, and I'd want to talk about it, is all the things you said, though, you've kind of focused in this lane that relates to our community or our business in terms of, I mean, I'm sure you're doing other things in your separate part of your life, but for us, you have stayed in you can't do everything all the time for everyone, right? But you can make a huge impact in certain areas. And I think when somebody's listening to this, when we do have men listening or anybody listening, thinking you're not going to be able to do everything for everyone, but if you're able to improve, you make an impact to the people around you, or being an ally to those who need it in this field, that could make a much larger impact than just a little bit of everywhere too.
I think that's so right. And you know what's so, I got chills when you said that. That's so true. The last two conferences we went to, I've done probably like 200 interviews for this mini documentary we're working on for like women in compliance. And there was a handful of stories where I would talk to a woman and then I would talk to somebody that she mentored. And to hear this person, this mentee, talk about their mentor and then talk about how that mentor's influence has turned them into a mentor for so many other people. It's exactly what you're talking about. That mentor had a whole nother job, right? They fit in some time for this mentee to build them up. And that impact set many of these folks on a different path and really changed the way that they think about leadership and all that kind of stuff. And again, it's just like you throw a little seed on the soil, it could turn into a massive tree. You know what I'm saying? Like you just have to be throwing those seeds out there because something's going to grow. You know what I mean?
Well, I wasn't sure whether you were going to bring up the documentary today, but now that you have, I want to ask you about it. I'd love you to talk about what it is and what you were doing with all of the interviews. And for those who haven't seen Nick at a conference, they include these little tiny hands that you clap at the end. So what are we clapping for? And talk about what you're trying to do with that, because I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, I just think any progress we've made in any realm is always a function of who came before us, right? Like we're standing on the shoulders of giants in everywhere, in science and industry and everything. And this, I think the same is true in our space. And being I came from professional services and then I worked in private equity, I saw a lot of these different industries. And I've noticed that in our industry, it really is something that's, I know I say it all the time and it sounds like fake at some point, but it's so unique. It's so special. The fact that a competitor can call up a competitor and share notes on how they built a better speak up program or how they did some aspect of their program. That's something that's so wildly unique.
And that creates the opportunity. That's my favorite thing about being in ethics and compliance.
Same here. I mean, it's so cool.
It's amazing.
And so there's this opportunity for a deep, rich network that you can build, not just within your own company, but across sort of company lines. And again, so much of the progress in our space has come from those conduits of information, right? Those connections between different practitioners in different spaces, sharing tactics, sharing ideas and wisdom and so forth. And as I look to the next chapter in this ethics and compliance journey that we're all on in this industry, I just think we're at this kind of inflection point, and it's going to go kind of one of two ways. We're either going to be more of what we've been and become even better and more impactful, and this thing is going to become more special. Or the risk also exists that we kind of revert to sort of the average industry where it has those same industry dynamics that marketing deals with and sales deals with and so forth. I think the only way that we can maintain this special thing that we built and that has come to define this industry, I mean, everyone's talking about it because it's real. You know what I'm saying? This isn't some like snow job. This is like a real special thing. I think the only way we can preserve that is if we continue to capture that wisdom that's out there and that knowledge that's out there and share that with each other. Not just for the sake of the network growing and being more robust, but for just the fact that there's so much great information out there. And so what we're trying to do with this documentary is we're trying to ask folks, give us the lessons that you've learned. Tell me about a woman who's impacted you. How did that inspiration help drop the scales from your eyes or turn that light bulb on for you and set you on a different path? Or what piece of advice would you give to someone, I know you hate this term, but who's a woman who's just getting into the space, mm-hmm. who is feeling that imposter syndrome in a room full of men or a room full of executives? What would you tell that person? What encouragement would you give them to have confidence in their experience and to bring to the conversation what their actual thoughts are? So we had a few kind of major buckets of questions. And like I said, I mean, some of these conversations have been it's such a treat for me because all day I'm just hearing good words. I'm hearing inspiring stories, tips and wisdom and stuff like that. So it's really cool. And we're working on kind of pulling that all together and just kind of documenting and sharing these stories.
Yeah, it's really, it is the reason that I'm in this field. And the nice part is everybody wants everyone to do better. And there isn't really, what I don't see ever changing in here is that people aren't going to be fighting over the, want to copyright their records retention policy or their post right. or some sort. And it's right. it's such a unique experience. And it makes up for the fact that our jobs can be lonely in our roles. And then sometimes that increases imposter or inadequacy because you're talking about things that people aren't excited about. But with that said, one of the things I talked to you about when we talked about the documentary, and we mentioned it a little bit before, is the idea of being an ally to women and women of color, different sexual orientations. There's so much can face additional challenges. I don't want to say, can we do better in those areas? But I think it's something that we always need to be mindful of. Because a lot of those women are also the giants who helped build our kids, who are feeling other more than one level.
I love this question because, I think the place that I kind of start or the thing that I've really leaned into is this advocate for women. And I think it's just because it's like a big part of the population. I think it's kind of an under-supported group within our industry, despite the dominance of women in the space. I think more than half of the kind of practitioners are probably women. I think it's really just a mindset though. Like going back to my analogy of somebody who's down to pick up trash on the sidewalk, nobody who's in that kind of a mindset is, I will pick up trash, but only styrofoam. I'm only picking up styrofoam, right? Nobody does that. You see trash, you pick it up. And I think the same thing is true for allyship. If you see injustice, you're going to speak up about it. You're going to pick that trash up, regardless of whether that's a Black woman or a white woman or whoever's underrepresented or whoever is feeling some of that injustice. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think what I'm trying to learn about and think about more in my journey, which as I've said before, it's sort of interesting. We're having this one-on-one conversation and it's weird that it kind of goes out into the world because it's I spend a lot of time thinking about implicit bias or what don't I know or what should I be doing better that I just don't realize is the thing that could be triggering or difficult while at the same time not going too far to decide that make it more of an other type experience because everyone has a unique experience. But it is something that as I look at this field too, thinking of women of color and just making sure or globally or coming from cultures where outside the US or different major countries where women may be less encouraged to do things, how do we help build those barriers? And obviously, by the title of this podcast and the things that I do, women in compliance is what I am primarily, this is what I'm very committed to, but I that's what I'm spending some time thinking about. Do I miss something that could be problematic or others? And how do I learn that to make sure I keep helping women not want to make this think, well, you know what? There are a few people out here who say it's a really great industry, but the rest of us are dealing with the stuff.
Yeah. And it's so hard because this whole bias conversation is such a tough conversation because ironically, almost, I find the people who are most kind of concerned about it are probably the ones who are further down the road in terms of rooting out unnecessary biases or at least having a consciousness of them. And I don't really have an answer for it because I think we all have biases. And I think our job is to just have a clear picture of what's kind of in play and what's healthy and what's not. Lisa Beth was on the Ethics Verse a week or so ago, and we were talking about this exact topic just in the context of investigations. Like, how can you come to an investigation and weed out the wrong biases, but make sure the right biases are there? And that got a bunch of reactions from the audience, as you can imagine. What do you mean the right biases are there? And she was like, well, we should have a bias for action. We should have a bias for justice. We should have a bias for the values that we espouse. Those aren't all necessarily bad. And so anyways, I just find that just like talking about them is really helpful. So what we've started doing at our company when we're going through like a hiring process is we've just encouraged everyone to talk about when they think there might be a bias in play. And so it's been really kind of eye-opening because we've been a lot more kind of vocal as a group about, hey, I'm concerned I might have a bias here. Let's kind of dig into that as a group. And just having that level of consciousness for the potentiality that a bias could skew something unnecessarily or put it in the wrong direction has, I think, allowed us to have a lot more sort of transparent, candid conversations about candidates. A, but B, also with each other to really kind of deconstruct these things. And so it's one of these things, going back to what I was saying, I think it's something that like can easily be hidden. And it's something that like you need to work on your own, because God forbid somebody hears about a bias that has been developed and I'm sharing it. But at the end of the day, I think I've had a lot of success, or I found a lot of success just talking about it with women, with people of color and so forth. And it's been really illuminating for me. And again, I could be reading it wrong, but I felt like there was an appreciation for a true sort of like curiosity-based conversation about deconstructing this thing and understanding how this person feels on a day-to-day basis or in the circumstances that are in question.
I mean, you don't know unless you talk about it, but talking exactly about it can be hard. Not everybody has to do it the way that we just did this, that will go out to all of our listeners. And with that, I've taken a tremendous amount of your time, but after you just talked about Lisa Beth and the Ethics Verse, this has my, it almost comes, and for those who don't know, that's Lisa Beth Lentini-Walker, who is a leader and one of the absolute giants in our field.
Super mentor. I mean, my gosh, the lives she's touched in her career.
She's a mentor and advocate, a friend of mine. I mean,
it's crazy. I mean, it's such an, she's so inspiring. I mean, so are you. I mean, I look at these people in our space who are doing these big things and making these huge impacts, and it can be intimidating, but it's, well, you know what? I don't need to have the impact that Lisa has or that Lisa Beth has or that Hema has to make a difference in someone's life. And I think just it's an inspiration, and it's so encouraging to see what folks like you guys are doing, and it spawns on more action. It's awesome.
Well, thank you. I think most of us just, I mean, for us, we started this podcast because there are about four on the Compliance Podcast Network, all of which were hosted by men. So Mary Shirley, Quick for Life, and I didn't really realize what we were getting into. And it's been like one of the best things I've done in my life. Scariest, but fun, totally. You know, the most fun. But I guess that just segues me to my last question. And all of them have gotten, the people these women we've talked about have actually gotten their Ethics for superhero makeover. Hello.
So Lisa, we got to get you on. We got to
I just want the picture.
I
just want the picture. So you don't have to feel pressure on
I got a guy. Let me see what I can do.
So, all right. So thank you so much. And on behalf of me and the podcast network, thank you for supporting us. And also, when you say you're going to do something to support people, whether it's books, whether it's other things, you do it. And it does not go unnoticed, and it's not unappreciated. And can't wait to see you at our next conference, where we can go be BFFs for a few days. And have a great day, all listeners. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Lisa. All you Gwickies out there, we'll see you soon. Thanks so much.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Great Women in Compliance. We hope you'll join us in honoring the great women in the compliance field by subscribing to this podcast and leaving a review.